Two of my favorite tour guides from Spain recommend itineraries for you to find out what makes their country so popular. And author Peter Stark explains how the U.S. border might have looked very different if Chief Tecumseh had been able to unite Native tribes into their own nation back in the early 19th century. That's coming up later in the hour on today's Travel with Rick Steves. But first, I'd like to focus on the troubled Holy Land, where Israelis and Palestinians are struggling to coexist. The brutality of the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israelis and the subsequent destruction of so much of Gaza by Israel have left the region more divided than ever. A recent conversation I had with a young Palestinian who's dedicated his career to finding peaceful ways for each community to better understand the other seems very timely. Aziz Abu Sarah grew up as an angry Palestinian kid in East Jerusalem, throwing rocks at Israeli soldiers. He became radicalized after the police killed his brother. But when he started to take Hebrew lessons, Aziz realized that crossing barriers into West Jerusalem let him see the realities of the people he'd thought of as enemies. It also gave them a chance to know him as a person as well. Today, Aziz calls himself a radical reconciler. He heads an organization that brings together into the same room Israelis and Palestinians who've lost family members from their ongoing conflicts to share their grief and to look for a way to live together. Aziz and his Jewish business partner, Scott Cooper, also founded Medji Tours to provide peace-building travels to meet people on either side of a conflict zone and to hear their divergent stories. Note that our interview with Aziz was recorded several months before the most recent events in Israel and Gaza, and our focus was primarily on the walls that divide Palestinians and Israelis, not in Gaza, but in Jerusalem and in the West Bank. Aziz, welcome back.
Thank you, Rick.
I just love your story about how you grew up angry like so many Palestinian kids, with loved ones who died in this struggle. But you grew beyond it. Can you just give us a little background? I understand your dad's cousin was a victim of the struggle between Palestine and Israel.
Yeah, my dad had two cousins who were killed, one before I was born and one when I was, I don't remember now, 9, 10 years old, who I knew very well, who was our next door neighbor. Through my life, 5 of my family members, including my brother, were killed. And just those repeating tragedies can make you quite angry, quite mad. It makes you feel that you have no choice but to revenge. It makes you feel that your whole life existence is about your anger. And if you let go, you are betraying your family. You are betraying yourself. You are betraying your father, your mother, who are very upset about all the people they've lost. You grew up thinking that this loss could happen any day to somebody else in your family.
That just festers inside of you. And then if you have the occasion to cross the wall and go to the other side, as you did, you can find that there are people who are your counterparts who are dealing with the same need for revenge. You worked in Israel you were a dishwasher, and you wrote about how people hardly knew your name. You were just the Arab boy that was washing the dishes.
Right.
But then you took the initiative, you learned how to speak Hebrew, and you got connected with Israelis, and you met a Jew who was just as angry as you were.
Yeah, I met both. I met Jews who were as angry as I was, people who've gone through experiences where they lost family members, people who lost their daughters, their brothers, their sons. I met somebody like Ronnie Hershenson, who've become a very dear friend, whose 2 sons were killed as soldiers in the army. I've met Rami Elhanan, whose daughter was blown up by a suicide bomber when she was 13 year old. And those stories were quite powerful, because growing up, I never heard those stories. I've heard our stories. We often know our own pain, and we find it difficult to connect with the pain of the other.
It is so heartbreaking, and it is just so, it's kind of like, not easy, but it's the natural inclination just to fall into that need for revenge and to make the killing worse. But there are courageous people who are stepping above that and working to connect. When I think of the Holy Land, I think of the wall that separates millions of Palestinians from millions of Israelis. What was the rationale for building the wall? And what's the view of it, would you say, from the Israeli side and the Palestinian side. How can we understand this wall?
I think most Israelis see the wall as a security, safety wall. It was built right after the Second Intifada started in the early 2000s, and it was built after a wave of suicide bombings that have killed hundreds of Israelis. And so to many Israelis, it's safety, it's security. The way most Palestinians see it is the exact opposite. This wall confiscates a lot of Palestinian land. It creates areas. It just surrounds cities within the Palestinian territories with walls that makes them unable to connect to other Palestinian cities. And it's a sign of oppression and a sign of taking your freedom. And neither hears the other and what this wall means to them. I can see why Israelis think it's about security. I disagree, but I can hear it and I can understand why they think in that way. And I think it's important that Israelis hear, even if sometimes they'll disagree, and what Palestinians see when they see this wall, especially if you live right next to it. It's very hard to normalize it. It's very hard to see it as a normal thing.
A tragedy I saw when I was in the Holy Land was the wall actually functioned to keep the communities apart, which made healing more difficult.
You know, when I grew up, the conflict was pretty bad. However, if you wanted to meet the other, it was possible. Today, if you want to meet the other, you need permits, you need military approvals, you need to find, there are only a handful of places that you can legally get people to meet from the two sides. And so when we talk about, you know, me meeting those people I mentioned earlier, like Roni Hirshenson and Ramil Hanan and so on, it is not legally possible for those meetings to happen, which means we don't learn about the story of the other. We don't get to listen to each other's pain. We see the other as a demon, as somebody who just wants to kill me. That's the only thing I see of the other. And unfortunately, it has been successful.
Aziz Abu Sarah is our guest on Travel with Rick Steves. His book, Crossing Boundaries, A Traveler's Guide to World Peace, highlights efforts toward peace and reconciliation in many of the world's most divided societies. We have web links to his work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Aziz, let's go beyond the Holy Land now, because you've taken your Holy Land experience and you've gone global. Give us an overview of the walls, both physical and metaphorical, that are a big part of your work. Give me sort of a review of where are there walls that travelers are able to actively deal with.
Walls exist everywhere I've been traveling, everywhere. Now, they're not always physical walls, but you can see, you know, even in Paris, in London, areas that people don't think of it as divided and segregated, there are walls. In our cities here in the US, we have those walls. In Washington, D.C., I remember taking a group of local travelers into an area called Anacostia, which is not commonly traveled to by people who live in the Washington, D.C. area, even though it's an old neighborhood, a very important neighborhood. There are some important things like the Frederick Douglass Museum. People don't go there because they're afraid to go there. They think it's not safe to go to that area. And I've seen that literally everywhere. You go to an area like Mostar in Bosnia, and Christians and Muslims often stick to their parts of the city. It's, you don't see a wall, but the wall exists. Everyone who lives there know where that border is.
One point you make very strongly in Crossing Boundaries is that you need to get different historical narratives. Museums, for example, are often nationally funded. Good example of that for me was learning about the potato famine in Dublin, which would have been an Irish focus, and learning about it in Belfast, which would have been a British focus. And the whole potato famine in Ireland was accounted for differently. You recommend books to give different perspectives, like, for example, Those Damned Rebels, The American Revolution as Seen Through British Eyes, or Side by Side, Parallel Histories of Israel and Palestine. I have found, and I would imagine you have too, that it's amazing how misguided a lot of travelers can be if they don't make a point to get information to help shape their travel plans and their perspectives that represent both narratives.
Absolutely. I think first, and it was a shock for me when I first learned it, don't believe everything you read in a museum. It's a good starting point,
right?
And then go and read more, study more. To me, a trip is to get my curiosity even more I get more interested because of this trip. If I see something in a museum that really interests me, I'm going to go and read more about it and study more about it. And you're going to find out sometimes what you read in the museum is not fully accurate. And that's okay. That's just how things are. Just be aware of it.
You got to be bold enough that it's produced in a society where the money has to come with strings attached, and it's not going to be a straight story. It's going to celebrate a certain perspective in most cases. Aziz, we're just basically out of time, but I'd like to finish with your experience in light of bridging these walls when you became a part of a bereaved families forum where Israeli and Palestinian families who had lost loved ones actually came together. You were the chairman of this organization.
Yeah, it's one of the best organizations that I wish nobody has to join. And it's the only organization that tries not to get bigger because it means more people would suffer. But it's a group of 600 Israelis and Palestinians who all lost family members. But it's such a powerful group because when you bring 600 families who all lost family members in the conflict, half Israelis and half Palestinians, it shocks people because they expect us to sit and fight, to sit and argue with each other. And instead, we always work together. We used our pain instead of to instill more fear and hatred and anger. And as you mentioned earlier, fear unfortunately convinces a lot of people and makes us do irrational things. We use our pain to encourage people to overcome hatred, to overcome fear, to connect with each other. And by saying, if I who lost my brother and Aframi who lost his daughter can work together, can say enough is enough, can say we're not doomed to this, we're not doomed to a cycle of violence, we're willing to break out of this violence, and we're not just going to work with each other, we see each other as brothers, as friends, then nobody has an excuse to not do the same, especially those who have not suffered the way we did.
Oh, that must have been such a beautiful experience. I guess beautiful is the word. What a hopeful thing. Aziz Abu Sarah, thank you for writing Crossing Boundaries, and you are just an inspiration in your work. Best wishes.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me.
There's more about Aziz and his work, including his TED Talk, at azizabusarah.com. We'll find out why Tecumseh is such an important figure in American history. But first, we're going to Spain on Travel with Rick Steves.